40% of the emissions are coming from buildings, which is, if you think about it from a sustainability standpoint, no sustainability strategy will be successful if buildings are not addressed seriously. And when I say buildings, I mean all types of buildings, like, you know, homes, offices, manufacturing sites, governmental buildings, all of them.
Hello, and welcome to the CVC Unplugged podcast from GCV. I'm Fernando Moncada. Increasingly, buildings are more than just bricks and mortar. Today, they're smarter, they're more capable, they're greener, and they're continually improving. Few companies are doing more work in this space than Johnson Controls, and today, I'm speaking with Yusuf Mawad, Managing Director of Johnson Controls' CVC unit, JCI Ventures. In our conversation, Mawad talks about how he was finding his feet when he first started in the role, and the process of figuring out where you fit into the organization and how you could contribute as much value as possible, as well as the importance of establishing a purpose early on. We talk about the ongoing digitization and decarbonization of the built environment, as well as the sheer size of the opportunity that exists to do this globally, given that roughly 40% of all emissions come from buildings. The simple fact, therefore, is that no grand energy transition can exist to meet our climate goals without a serious approach to make buildings greener. And an effective way to do that is also to make them more digital. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to CVC Unplugged, and above all, enjoy the show. So I'm here with Yusuf Mawad. Yusuf, thank you so much for joining. I've been excited to speak to you on the podcast ever since we met at the aquarium in Monterey. How have you been?
Hello, Fernando. Thank you so much for inviting me to that great podcast. I usually really follow what you guys do, and I think you've been adding so much value to our community. I remember when we met at Monterey for the GCV yearly meeting. It was great to connect with lots of people, to connect with you guys. It's been going well. Better than, you know, before the event, from a kind of economic situation. So yeah, I'm excited as well. Thank you again for you know, inviting me to that podcast.
Of course, and yeah, because the economic situation around the time of the event was a bit tricky. It was right, you know, days after the SVB kind of, I suppose, collapse would be a way you could describe it now, looking back. So that was a bit tricky, but yeah, glad things are going better now. I suppose we could begin, you know, to tell me a bit about yourself and your background. You know, you started as head of JCI Ventures 2021, I believe. So what led you to that point?
Yeah, so, you know, I've started my career as an entrepreneur myself. I've worked for 10 years building a company in the space of data analytics, and more specifically in healthcare data analytics, public health data analytics. So, you know, this experience, entrepreneurship, is kind of the, for me, like the most formatting experience in business. It allows you to have skin in the game, to understand exactly what does, having a product that fits the market, what does this mean tangibly? It allows you also to be mindful about your investors, about how you're going to manage the money, about how you're going to manage the runway. So, you know, entrepreneurship is a great way to kind of introduce people to business in general, and more specifically to growth, you know, opportunities, how you have a race against time in order to create the value, to understand exactly like where does it fit. And so all this kind of experience, you know, gave me a passion about starting things and building things and growing things. So after that great experience, I studied for my MBA. And after that, I joined for 5 years a strategy consulting group in Germany and in France, where I've also, you know, consulting also kind of formats you to kind of adapt to these big organization challenges, which are, you know, strategy and management consulting. And after that, I was offered to be, to be part of JCI Ventures, which I am heading today. So it's kind of this mix between my entrepreneurship background about this consulting kind of skills that led me to kind of have the right mix to lead like a CVC group such as JCI Ventures. I think, you know, I'm always passionate about entrepreneurs. I think I don't see myself as, like many people say, like now I'm on the other side of the table. Rather, the contrary, I see that I'm really next to the entrepreneurs. You know, investors and more so corporate investors have this great role and mandate to kind of be the bridge between entrepreneurs and big organizations, where you have huge expertise, like decades old expertise locked within this organization. So I think like CVC units can play this role between a very agile being, which is the startup that is completely transforming, that is completely understanding its market and its customers, and, you know, like a big organization, very old, concentrated the huge expertise within it, such as Johnson Controls. So it's exciting. It's something that I love, and it's kind of combining my, you know, two passions for business, for big businesses, organizations, but also for super agile and entrepreneurial endeavors.
Great. And what was that transition like for you from a kind of entrepreneurial and consulting background to a more corporate context? How did that kind of dip in that water go?
Yeah, that's a great question. Listen, there's always kind of an adaptation phase, whatever you do. There's always like at the first, you kind of need to understand your ecosystem. But I think why that was kind of good for me is because I used those very agile skills, because whenever you're an entrepreneur, you have to adapt very quickly. It's not something that you don't have the luxury to kind of really understand the details before you adapt. You just have to throw yourself in the water, build the skin for the game, and understand your situation, or like to be aware of where you are. So during the first days of, you know, when I moved to a big organization such as Johnson Controls, I took my time to understand who is who, to understand the responsibilities, to understand where I sit, to understand how I can add value. Really, precisely as if it was like a customer and you want to understand how you can add value by building a product or by building a service. So I took the first couple of weeks to really understand people, to understand my colleagues. And after that, like whenever you have those bridges internally, it's easy whenever you need information. So you don't spend time understanding every tiny detail, but rather you spend time building the bridge necessary for you to be able to navigate the organization. Of course, it's such a big organization that I'm still learning today lots of things and meeting lots of people, even today after 2 years. It's exciting. So I also am somebody who is kind of curious by nature, positive by nature. So I enjoy kind of challenges like these to kind of merge within big ships such as Johnson Controls. So it's been a nice change that I was able to kind of use some skills that I've earned before in order to navigate it better.
Yeah, so maybe give a bit of background on JCI Ventures itself. You know, how did it come about? What was the motivation? And what were the kind of first baby steps to get it off the ground?
So when I joined JCI, it was already, there was like a CVC unit in Johnson Controls. Back in 2016, there was a big merger between Tyco, it was called back then, and Johnson Controls that kind of gave birth to what we call today JCI, you know, the big group, the global smart building leader, if you want. So JCI Ventures have always been, like the CVC arm has always been, you know, existing in Johnson Controls. As with every CVC, we took the approach or the angle of strategy, meaning that we kind of put lots of weight on the strategic part of the fund versus the financial side of the equation. Of course, like finance is always present. At the end of the day, venture capital is like a financial game, meaning that you always have to be careful about the money you allocate. You always have to be mindful about the returns that you make on the money. However, our really kind of chief or primary goal from our CVC is really strategy. And when I say strategy, it means that, you know, we would like to be supportive for entrepreneurs and innovators out there in our spaces or in our, you know, like strategic themes, if you want. This is why we give a lot of attention to whom we would like to partner with, whom we would like to invest in, because we really want to be sure that both sides are having a great and symbiotic and synergistic relationship. That's kind of the, if you want, the mandate of JCI Ventures as a CVC unit for Johnson Controls. So to answer the second part of your question, what did I do as, you know, first steps to kind of build or like improve our CVC positioning? In CVC, as you know, there are two sides of the equation. You have the internal stakeholder and you have the external stakeholder, both of them having different perspectives about products, about service, and both of them are synergistic with each other, because the first group, which is the internal group, is really thinking about the existing market, is thinking about the existing product, whereas the external stakeholder, which is the startup, the innovator, the, you know, like the team that is working on disrupting that first one, is thinking more about how can I solve the problem better? How can I be more innovative in, or like how I can be more creative in how I'm solving that problem? So what I did is that I established a clear roadmap, if you want, for how we would need to engage with innovators and how we need to engage with internal stakeholders from our side. So it's kind of building that team that can be like a great connection, an easy to reach connection, a very clear in its purpose team and connection. So you move, I moved the team from being more reactive to being more proactive, both for internal stakeholders and for startups. And this way you kind of have a mechanism that allows startups to have access to great expertise, to massive commercial opportunities with Johnson Controls, and allows Johnson Controls to also build those bridges with the innovation community. So it's kind of a two-way. I always make sure that it's a two-way kind of value flowing to and from Johnson Controls.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good place to kind of dive into the thesis a bit, right? So tell me about what you guys look at and how you invest. So if I can be somewhat reductive, I guess it might be fair to say that it's broadly, you know, making buildings smarter, greener, and just better, right? Generally speaking. But tell me how that translates into an investment strategy.
Sure. So as I said before, since we are a strategic fund, so strategy is really something that is very essential to the success of the mandate of JCI Venture. And because we are strategic, we really understand, we take time in understanding, if you want, Fernando, the strategy of the corporate organization. And as you know, Johnson Controls is one of the biggest leaders in the world in terms of smart buildings, as you said, like smart building solutions. But what does that mean? We have kind of took that vision and tried to granulate it into different kind of categories in order for us to be clear about which spaces we want to play in. And if you think, you know, about Johnson Controls, again, it's really about being digital for the building. It's about being sustainable and decarbonized. So more and more solutions that help our customers decarbonize. And finally, number three, to be really a technology player. So these kind of are the three main theses where we evolve our activity around. If you want me to deep dive a bit, the first one, which is the smart building solution, helps the building be more digital, more healthy, as you said. The second one helps the building be more decarbonized and sustainable. And what do we mean by that? Here, the building needs to be, with more and more regulation, the building needs to be more energy efficient. So, for example, energy efficiency solutions are something that we really kind of take time to understand and take time to kind of identify the synergies that we can have with the startups. And finally, the third bucket is, you know, that is more kind of deep tech, if you want. It's really in the heart of the lines of business of Johnson Controls. So you see HVAC tech, for example, heat pumps, all the kind of cameras, fire and security, all the legacy products of Johnson Controls in that bucket. And, you know, we try here to build kind of, again, connections and bridges with innovators that are really trying to work within our existing legacy lines of business.
Interesting. And looking at your portfolio companies, would you say that, you know, when you look at their, broadly speaking, revenue streams, are they coming more from new buildings being constructed or retrofitting existing ones, would you say?
Yeah, a great question. So challenges in terms of innovation in our space, in our industry, which is the building retrofit industry, is really, you know, being kind of, we see that in the buildings that are old, so legacy buildings, as we call them, but also we see lots of challenges in new buildings that are being constructed. Of course, the challenge also, it depends on the segment. So for example, the challenge in an old commercial building is very different than the challenge in an old residential building, for example. So our startups in our portfolio that actually, you know, people can check on our page, on our website, they all revolve around, as we said, like the strategic focus areas, but also like some of them address new building challenges. Some, for example, I can give you an example about some of them addressing that. For example, you know, Nozomi Networks, which is an OT cybersecurity. So this is for a really kind of advanced structure, right? And some others are really addressing the legacy kind of side of the equation, where you kind of need the technology in order to, in a cost-efficient manner and in an innovative manner, embed digital and embed sustainability and decarbonization in an old building. So, you know, like we try to identify the, again, as I say, like the ideal deal for us, or, you know, like startup for us, is a startup that is number one strategic, that is number one synergistic with what we do, and number three that is within the market segments that we kind of identified.
And you mentioned, obviously, digitization is a huge driver. Sustainability is a massive driver, right? I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think buildings, if I remember the statistic correctly, it's something like 40% of all energy consumption in the world, right?
Yes, 40%, exactly. 40% of the emissions are coming from buildings, which is, you know, if you think about it from a sustainability standpoint, no sustainability strategy will be successful, or, you know, decarbonization strategy will be successful if buildings are not addressed seriously. And when I say buildings, I mean all types of building, like, you know, homes, offices, manufacturing sites, governmental buildings, all of them, they need to be decarbonized. And of course, the challenge are, number one, with legacy buildings, how do you implement a technology or, you know, like products and services that do not cost you a lot, because, you know, like sometimes retrofit costs more than building a new building. So that's kind of the whole challenge. How do I embed like new technology that will make the building more sustainable within an old building? And the second one is, as we've identified before, when I'm constructing a new building, which kind of products and which kind of solutions I need to include nowadays moving forward in order to make me sustainable, to make the building sustainable. And, you know, we see that revolution happening from like coming really, or supported, if you want, from two fronts. The first one is regulatory. As you know, governments are more and more kind of clear about the roadmaps and the need for decarbonization. Like in Europe, for example, where we really see the regulation and the kind of legal framework being really very straightforward in saying that we will be decarbonized sooner or later. So we really need to work sooner. And the deadlines are really close, like in really early. We think that it's going to be like, you know, 2030 is far, but it's actually very, very, like, you know, it's soon. So you really need to be innovative in the products that you do. And the second pillar where we see kind of a support in a more decarbonized building is customer behavior. Customers now, like, you know, want to be in a building that is energy efficient, that is environmentally friendly, that is conscious, at least, maybe not net zero yet, but at least, you know, you feel that the tenant, whether be it an employee or like an apartment owner, or, you know, somebody working in a manufacturing site, you know, you see that that consciously we want something that is respectful of the environment. And we will be more kind of proud and happy to belong to buildings or to be in buildings where this is kind of taken into consideration. So, yeah, like the regulatory framework and the customer behavior are really pushing the decarbonization topic in the buildings industry much more than before. They're supporting this revolution, if you want.
So because of that, would you say, you know, over the past 2 or 3 years that there's been, I suppose, maybe a noticeable kind of increase in the proactivity of building owners, either to retrofit their buildings or to, I suppose, build them more sustainable to begin with, or more digitized to begin with?
Yes, exactly. As you said, like a building that is more digital is the first step for the building to be sustainable. So, you know, think about it as, you know, being laying down the infrastructure that is needed for the building to be able to be like a true net zero or sustainable building. You know, like some examples include, for example, energy management systems. If you really want your building to be smart in managing its power consumption, you need your building to have like a building management system to begin with, like a first infrastructure on top of which you will start building more and more sophisticated solutions for the building to be sustainable and decarbonized.
And part of that, I suppose, solution, or part of that equation, rather, is the number of people, I suppose, that are in a building at any given time, or the tendencies of occupancy within that building, right? So if you, I suppose, joined JCI in, you know, I think it was 2021, mid-pandemic, how much different would your strategy be if you joined before the pandemic? You know, how strongly are those effects felt in your sector?
So I think, you know, there is a strong vision within like, you know, Johnson Controls, which is really kind of continuous innovation. You know, our founder has invented the thermostat and then went into automobiles. So it's really right. A fascinating company, you know, where you kind of have, you know, we see innovation really in many, many kind of sectors of the company, and it's really embedded in its genes. Now, strategy in big organizations, and, you know, because I've also worked before on that in like strategy consulting, it's something that should always be agile. A fixed strategy is something that is not a healthy indicator for any organization. Now, that being said, you always need also to have your own kind of long-term vision to be more fixed and serious. So I think of it as Johnson Controls always have this great vision of being, you know, an innovator, or of being like a partner to the building owner to embed or to deliver more and more innovative technology and products. And it has been really that throughout its history. If you see the history of the company, it has really been delivering innovation every decade. And it's been kind of surviving all the changes in the economy, kind of like changes of the world, because of that deep belief that we really need to always be on top of the game. We need to understand the customer. We need to kind of answer the customer pain problems. Now, that being said, of course, when this is kind of really the building block of your strategy, then everything that comes within the development of products and the development of customer behaviors, you need to adopt it. So one of the great examples we've talked about is decarbonization and sustainability. So yes, as you said, like, we see the customers requesting more solutions. Even ourselves, we're kind of more aware of the impact of everything that we do on the environment. So yeah, I mean, if I joined, I don't know, like 10 years ago, I don't think decarbonization and sustainability has always been a main point for the value that Johnson Controls delivers. But maybe now it's more of a priority, I would say. It's a question of kind of moving priorities within the organization. But the long-term vision of that great company is really innovation continuously.
So my eye is drawn firstly to a company like XYSense, right? Which provides workplace sensors, you know. So how do you come across a company like that and embed its technology and then present it to the committee?
So basically, when we, again, as I was saying, like, the most important part of what we do is to try to understand where the synergy lies between Johnson Controls and between the startup. So once this is identified, of course, like with every venture capital or, you know, a corporate venture capital kind of fund, we have the process of doing due diligence, understanding exactly the added value of that startup, to understand the unique positioning within its own ecosystem. And most importantly, to understand the team that is behind it. You know, what is the appetite for the management team, for the CEO specifically? Where does she or he want to go in their plans? What is their vision? And how does it complement, you know, within JCI's own vision within this space? Once we have like all these kind of diligence done, and we have a clear kind of understanding of the value of the startup, we, of course, you know, have an investment committee for which we will present the case, and we will, you know, explain in detail why do we think this is a great startup, why do we think the relationship, the investment relationship, will be very strategic, will be very synergistic for both parties. And we, you know, we try to ask them for their approval or for the vote. Now, of course, like, it's interesting to see the dynamics, if you want, or the discussions that will happen, because it's important for companies such as Johnson Controls to understand, whenever you want to make a move, why is it something that is synergistic? So we make sure that we, like, underline why the relationship within, like, any investment that we do is really strategic and synergistic with the company. So I'm repeating a lot this word synergistic and complementary, because that's exactly what we have to capture before we go to the investment committee. The value of that complementarity, if you want, between our teams and between the startup.
You need to demonstrate the alignment between corporate, yep, and startup, essentially.
Exactly. That's a big, big point as a rationale for the investment.
And as I think you correct me if I'm wrong, you're on an investment committee yourself, right? For WV Ventures.
So yeah, WV Ventures is a fund, you know, who was kind of formed, I think, a couple of years ago, between like the companies that are within Milwaukee, because as you know, Johnson Controls is headquartered in Milwaukee. So it's a joint fund between Johnson Controls, Foxconn, Advocate Healthcare, and Northwestern Mutual. So it's kind of a combination between healthcare, between semiconductors or like deep tech, between smart buildings, technology, and finance, you know, with Northwestern Mutual. It's a great, actually, combination. And yeah, I'm part of the board. We meet very regularly to discuss like the challenges and the innovation that is happening, you know, across our spaces. And it's, you know, it's wonderful to see how, when you, for example, when we discuss, you know, innovation in fintech, for example, it's wonderful to see how kind of this pollinates across the industries. And having this great exposure is so essential for us to have an understanding about, you know, innovation happening not only in our space, but also what's happening, you know, in a more kind of broader overview or broader lens, you know, from like across those spaces and those industries. It's very essential, Fernando, for any person working in innovation, and especially in tech innovation, to always remind yourself how important it is to really look to go like take like a higher view on the innovation ecosystem to understand how it's going to impact your own space. So, you know, I always make sure that I'm not always only looking on the smart building space, but I'm also having an eye on what's happening in finance, what's happening in supply chain, what's happening in, you know, deep tech, in order for you to, or for us to make sure that we're always on top in terms of what's happening in innovation. You can never be sure. Innovation happens suddenly, but at least we try as much as we can to be ready, at least to be ready from an understanding perspective when we go and, you know, try to have a deeper look into a specific area.
And how has that helped being part of that board, both, you know, in terms of both figuring out perhaps some technology areas that might be useful on the smart building side, as well as, you know, from being on the committee yourself, how to pitch to your own committee at JCI?
It's really has been a great experience with WV Ventures, you know, because, yeah, I mean, as you said, like, you always also, you're in always connection with your peers that are in, you know, the same position as you in different organizations. And I just want to open a parenthesis to really say that the GCV community has really been exceptional in that specific area and value, because it's important to understand also what are your peers thinking about corporate venturing. As you know, Fernando, this is corporate venturing is a practice that has been evolving and maturing throughout the years, and we're still innovating in it. It's you know, it's still kind of the spectrum is large about the if you want the strategy and the philosophy of how to guide a CVC. So, you know, from positions as such as in WVV or in, you know, staying in connection with you guys, participating in what you guys you do, always is essential to give me the perspective of how this practice is evolving. So from a practice perspective, it's also very important to keep your eye always connected and your brain always hooked to what's happening within your industry, to be able also to reform your practice, to reform your process to what's been kind of also happening with your peers and within the ecosystem in general.
And in this particular sector, how challenging is it to see where the ball is going to be?
Very, very challenging. I don't think, you know, it's, I don't think there will be like a perfect or like an ideal, if you want, CVC kind of setting. I think it's very dependent on each organization, because each organization is different. I mean, they might be the same, you know, from their size or from their kind of motivation or intent by having a CVC unit, but each organization is really different. So you will have some organizations that are kind of more financially inclined than others. You will have more organizations that are more strategic than others with their intent from the fund. You can have spaces and themes that are very different. Like a bank would see like a corporate venture capital super differently than from, you know, like a big industrial player such as JCI. So I think it's very important for all CVCs to understand the possibilities of that spectrum, and they to identify which one is best suited for the specific situation you're in or the specific organization that you're in. It's hard to apply like a framework or to kind of have in mind like this is the best setting, so I'm going to implement it. I think it's rather let me understand the organization that I'm in. Let me understand its fears and its kind of challenges and where it wants to go. What kind of value does it need from a CVC? And then trying to look outside in similar kind of situation, what has been the ideal setting? That's kind of how I see a CVC. And this is why it's important to always keep an eye on the best practices and the evolution in that field.
And what about in smart buildings itself as a sector? When I suppose you know what the drivers are. So can you extrapolate from that where the technology is going to be?
Well, I mean, as you said, listen, the construction and the building industry in general has been slow to adopt new technologies. I mean, slow relative to other industries, right? It's been kind of lagging behind a bit. However, nowadays, tools and evolution that we see in technology is making it more easy to disrupt or kind of to be more innovative in that space. So I see it's a great time for entrepreneurs that are working, you know, in that space, that have expertise in that space, to really start something new, because it is the time right now. You know, like the building is more digital. The building needs to be more sustainable. The building will be more and more a different animal than what we see today. Just like, you know, with cars, like we started with something, now we're really talking about like EVs being something super, is going to be kind of a very significant part of the market, and very soon. It's a huge revolution from a manufacturing perspective, from a technology innovation perspective, from a product perspective. It's the same that's happening also with the building. The building is going to be very different. The building where we live, the building where we work, the building where we interact with others is going to be very different today from 10 years from now or 20 years from now. So there's lots of opportunities. And I think, I'm always very happy to see more and more entrepreneurs kind of deciding to jump into that space. And I invite people who want to innovate, you know, to jump in there and to see the opportunities that are really vast. And, you know, I'm very happy and proud, you know, that Johnson Controls is, you know, aside or took the decision to be next to people who take this decision to innovate in that space. You know, and of course we're here if in case any entrepreneurs listening to that podcast wants to reach out, you know, to someone in the industry, please feel, I mean, it would be great to hear from you.
Well, yeah, because you guys joined them quite early, right? Seed to Series A type stage.
Yes, we are an early stage investor in a broader sense. Of course, it depends on, it's a case by case kind of more decision. But yes, we like to see a startup that is before its really kind of explosive growth stage. That's kind of our ideal sweet spot, if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. And at the minute, by the way, how big is your team? Is it just you at the minute? Are you guys building out?
We do have people. So our philosophy is not only to have people, you know, within the ventures team. We also kind of align with, or like try to use our colleagues in many other divisions that can help us, like in the analyses, that can help us in scouring and so forth. So we try to be more kind of synergistic in that sense.
And integrated into the kind of the rest of the company.
Exactly. Yeah.
So for founders that are listening, one, you know, how do they get in touch with you? And two, once they get in the room, what is it you want to hear from them in a pitch?
So how to get in touch with us? Please go to our page on the JCI website. You can, you know, see the details on how to contact me or contact somebody from the team. The information is there. Second, like what we would like to hear in the pitch, it's largely dependent on the entrepreneurs, right? I mean, the more clear, the more focused, the more targeted you are about the problem or the solution that you are building, the better it is. I personally really have a big belief in that success starts with focus. You need to have a specific focus in order for you to put all the chances of success to your side. You know, because focus kind of makes you better aligned with your team, makes you better aligned with your customer, makes you an expert in understanding the problem, the specific problem that you're solving. So I like to see specificity and focus.
Mm-hmm. And when, what do you definitely not want to see?
I think apart from being focused, we're talking about the product. I think it's important to see the vision and the passion about the person leading the project. So I usually, even if it's a great product or a great service, if I don't see that there's kind of passion, that there's commitment, and this is something that you can feel. It's harder and harder because we spend our times in front of screens nowadays. But still, after a couple of calls, you understand or you start having some kind of indication about the passion and the vision that any CEO has and how kind of relentlessly they want to make this happen. You feel those things. So I definitely don't want to see like somebody who is only doing it for a specific period of time in their head or kind of for a specific reason. That's a major killer for any investor, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, you want their kind of purpose to be the purpose of the company rather than, you know, it's not just a stepping stone for them type of thing.
Yeah, of course. Like their purpose should be their purpose of their own company. Yeah, it should be like their vision. They should kind of love it. They should cherish it. They should really be ready to understand the landscape while you navigate. Because you know, when you're an entrepreneur, it's kind of, I always kind of have this analogy that you're on a ship and there is a raging sea. Always. Like the sea is never still. So sometimes it's big waves, sometimes it's high wind, sometimes it's, you know, like people within on the ship that are not cooperative or they're not responsive. So it's kind of these reflexes that you build that kind of allows you to always make sure that all these signals are well read. You need to, it's not that they're not going to be here. You're always going to have a storm. But the most important piece is how are you going to read the storm, react to it, prepare for it, make sure that people with you on the team understand it. And there's only one thing that makes you do that, like one thing and one thing only, which is your passion. If you're not passionate, you're not going to be able to sail those seas, because I mean, it's a big sacrifice.
Everything I suppose flows from the passion itself. And speaking of kind of raging seas and storms, how would you advise startups kind of get through this current macro downturn that we're seeing? Or that we have been seeing?
I think investors are looking for more and more, I think, very clear value propositions. It should be very crystal clear what is the value, qualitatively and quantitatively, of the product and the service. And how is this possible? It is possible because you are specific and focused, from my understanding. I think it's harder than ever to, you know, raise money. It's harder to kind of make sure that you are well connected with the right investors, you know, the strategic ones that you need, because it's an important decision that an entrepreneur has to make, amongst other, which investor do I have to have with me on the cap table? So these days are harder, or more harder, even for that kind of decision. So my advice would be, you know, like, make sure that the value is there, make sure that you're, you know, providing very clear and description about that, and make sure also that you are very lean in your operations. You need to be lean in the operations. Gone, I think, are the days where like teams are not kind of optimized. You need like a very clear value proposition, very clear quantification of the value, and a very lean team doing it.
Right. Every part needs its purpose, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like you really need to be very, it's a time to be like a very agile, fast and quick to react animal. This is what's going to save you. You know, but if you're kind of still struggling to understand your product market fit, which is fine, which is part of the game, but you really need to be quick to understand where is your fit and then build on top of it, not build a team to discover that. You know, sometimes I see like teams of 10 and 15 people without like a product market fit yet. For me, that's I mean, again, there's nothing, you know, like black and white in our industry. I think I would prefer to see startups who have validated the product market fit and then are building a team for that, rather than startups who are building a team to understand the product market fit. But again, like, it's venture capital. I might be wrong, but that's kind of my inclination.
No, I think that seems to be mostly the kind of general consensus. So see, it seems to be on the money. And I suppose lastly, I want to ask, you know, what's next for you guys? What's next for JCI Ventures? Where do you hope to be looking back, you know, 2 years from now?
I think we want to kind of keep being that innovation vehicle for Johnson Controls, that kind of bridge between the external world and the internal world of JCI, you know, and try as much as possible to identify great entrepreneurs working on great things in order for us to be supportive.
Well, on that note, Yusuf, thank you so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed speaking with you and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much, Fernando, really, for that. Hope to see you soon.
That is it for CVC Unplugged this week, folks. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to keep up to date with all the latest guests. I have been Fernando Moncada. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from Inner Production, whose great work you can take a look at innerproduction.com. We'll be back again next week. Until then, have a good one.